Welcome to Your Call. I'm Holly Kernan, sitting in for Rose Aguilar, who's away. Shane Bauer, who was hiking with two friends on the border between Iran and Iraq, was arrested by Iranian officials and jailed for 26 months, a little more than 2 years. He writes, "No part of my experience was worse than the 4 months I spent in solitary confinement." Now he's back in Northern California, and the investigative journalist has written an article about the conditions of solitary confinement in America's prisons, focusing on California. Last July, prisoners in the isolation wing of the high-security Pelican Bay prison went on a hunger strike to protest conditions there. That strike, which began with 1,000 prisoners at Pelican Bay, soon spread to 6 other prisons, with as many as 12,000 inmates protesting against long-term SHU confinement across the state. After being released from prison in Iran, Shane Bauer decided to find out what solitary conditions were like in the United States and how people ended up there. His article is the cover story of the latest Mother Jones magazine, and he joins us in studio to talk about it. Hi, welcome.
Hi. Thanks for having me.
It's good to have you back safe here in California. Well, I think we should start with your confinement in Iran, just to kind of compare and contrast and give us a sense of how you got to this work here in California. So what were the conditions of your imprisonment in Iran, especially right at first?
Well, you know, we were captured hiking near the Iran-Iraq border, and for 4 months of the 26 months, I was in solitary confinement. The three of us were in solitary confinement, and
was that at the very beginning, or was that?
It was. Uh-huh. It was immediately.
Okay.
Yeah, we were immediately put in solitary, and then after those 4 months, Josh and I were put together in a cell, but Sarah remained alone for the remainder of her time in prison,
and
which was
13 months.
Uh-huh. Yeah.
So for those of us who have never been in solitary confinement, tell us what that's like.
You know, it's something that the typical answer to anybody that you ask about solitary confinement is it's something that, you know, is impossible to describe, but it's kind of the antithesis of what we experience day to day. I mean, almost every minute, the kind of having a world around us, people to interact with, you know, when that's taken away, everything changes, really. I mean, I found it harder to think, even, you know, when you don't have people to talk to, everything slows down, and time just kind of stays still. And it's like, you know, you don't want to think about, the next day. I mean, even having to be there for another day, let alone a week, a month, or years.
And as the 4 months went on and you didn't have contact with anybody except your guards, what was that like for you mentally? You say it nearly broke you.
Yeah, I mean, there were times that I just couldn't bear the thought of going any further, and just kind of broke down. I mean, it's you know, you're kind of bearing a weight constantly, constantly trying to kind of keep yourself moving forward, keep yourself together, and there were times that, you know, I couldn't do that.
And how much of that did you carry back with you? You were released in September of 2011.
Yep.
How much of that experience do you think you still carry?
You know, I, it's definitely, you know, still a part of me, having gone through that. It's, you know, getting out of a situation like that is wonderful and difficult, you know, and when you're inside that, you don't realize that when you get out that, you know, it's not over. And this is something that, you know, there's a lot of kind of research that's been done on this, people that leave situations of isolation and have a hard time kind of reintegrating. I mean, even I was mostly with a cellmate, but also, you know, isolated within that context, couldn't interact with anyone else. And when I got out, it was, you know, it was difficult for a while to even interact with people that I knew. It's something that you have to kind of relearn. And for people who are, you know, in prison for crimes that have kind of a history of violence, it's even more serious in a way because, you know, a lot of people go back out and come right back in. The rate of recidivism for people who have been in isolation is much higher than somebody who's been in the general population because it's so difficult to readjust. And, you know, a lot of feelings come up that are you know, a lot of anger and kind of feelings of confinement that it's hard to know how to deal with, you know.
Well, and when you got back, you had these stacks of letters from inmates around the U.S. and in California, and that moved you to really look into what was happening here.
Well, I actually, I initially reached out to inmates in hearing about the hunger strikes, you know, that something that really caught my attention.
Because, these are the Pelican Bay hunger strikes
right.
that started there, okay.
Yep. The last hunger strike, which was in October of last year, was shortly after I got out. So hearing that there were up to 12,000 people hunger striking, many of whom were in, you know, solitary confinement, was startling to me. I mean, I had to hunger strike when I was in prison over, you know, issues of conditions. So that really drew my attention. And then I, you know, start kind of learning a bit about the process, you know, behind the whole thing, how people end up in solitary, why they can't get out. And then I start kind of corresponding with some inmates. And as soon as I did that, you know, there was, everybody responded. People actually knew our story quite well, more than, you know, kind of regular people on the outside that recognize us. I was pretty surprised at the detail in which they knew our situation.
So you decided to go to Pelican Bay and check this out for yourself.
Yep.
So explain to us what the SHU is. That's the secure housing unit in Pelican Bay. Was built in, I think, 1989 to house supposedly the most dangerous inmates.
Right.
And it's very isolated. It's way up in the tip of Northern California.
Yep. So there's actually five of these security housing units around this, across the state. And they essentially are units of isolation where inmates are put usually in a cell alone, sometimes with a cellmate. In Pelican Bay, it's I think over 95% of prisoners are alone, are in solitary. And it's long term. So the security housing unit is meant to be, you know, a place where people stay for many years. And most of the people that are in the security housing unit, the vast majority, I think it's around 97%, are there on indefinite terms, which means they don't know when they will get out.
And the California Department of Corrections and Rehabilitation, the CDCR, says that they don't consider the SHU solitary confinement because inmates have TV, they have contact with staff when they bring them food,
right.
So they don't consider this solitary.
Yeah, and there's no correctional department in the United States that considers, you know, that will say that they have solitary confinement. You know, I was told the same thing in Iran. You know,
that yours wasn't solitary confinement.
Yeah, I mean, a TV is not human contact. A guard sliding food through a slot, you know, it's not human contact. And the UN actually defines solitary confinement as 22 hours or more per day without human contact. You know, so, I mean, even 2 hours of human contact is still internationally considered solitary confinement. But in the SHU, you know, a guard will come to give them food, and that they have a television. They go out, you know, not actually outside, they go to what they call a dog run, which is kind of a larger cell with an open top for an hour every day.
But that's where they're able to exercise alone.
Right. And it's a very small area. It's, you know, difficult place to exercise. There's not any kind of equipment or anything like that. It's a big cement room.
So what was the process like for you to get into Pelican Bay? How difficult is that?
You know, it actually wasn't very difficult. I contacted the Department of Corrections and asked them if I could visit, and they said yes. I mean, they were actually pretty cooperative, which I appreciated.
So you went up there, and one of the things that you said in this article that struck me is that you struck up a conversation with one of the guards who was asking about your imprisonment in Iran, and you said, you know, what would he say if I told him I needed human contact so badly that I woke up every morning hoping to be interrogated?
Right. Yeah, I mean, I, you know, I think that is a kind of a striking example to somebody in that position because, know, nobody loves to be interrogated. But there's just, I mean, if you're alone for 2 days, I mean, imagine sitting in your bedroom, you know, where you have a bed, things like that, closing the windows for 2 days. I mean, very few people could do that. I couldn't do that. I mean,
What was your interaction with guards like? I mean, you have this not unique, but very exceptional experience that you've been a prisoner, and yet he's looking at you as somebody who shouldn't have been confined. What was it like for you to watch the dynamic between the guards and inmates there?
In Pelican Bay?
Yeah.
I didn't really get to see much of it, to be honest. My visit was very controlled. You know, I was taken to a unit of the SHU that was kind of made up of prison informants, and there was only one person I was allowed to talk to who was the same person that they've allowed other journalists to talk to in the past.
Who was that?
I can't remember his name, to be honest with you.
I'll look it up.
But you know, he had kind of this rapport with the guards, you know, where they had a pretty good relationship. He was on his way out of the SHU. He had informed on other prisoners in order to get out, one of the ways.
So maybe you can explain that to us. What is gang validation, mm-hmm. which is the way most people end up in solitary?
Yeah.
Okay, so explain to us, what is this gang validation?
It's the way most people end up in the SHU. There are other, you know, there's almost 12,000 people in some form of isolation in California. There's other types of units, but the SHU is the long-term situation. So the process that, you know, by which people get put in the SHU is called gang validation. So everybody who has an indeterminate SHU term is considered either a gang associate or a gang member, not just a gang associate or gang member, but associate or member of a prison gang, one of seven prison gangs, actually. So in order to be validated, the prison, namely a gang investigator, has to provide at least three pieces of evidence of gang connection. And, you know, it's important to know that the people who are in this situation, you know, they get kind of billed by the Department of Corrections as the worst of the worst, but almost 80% of them are associates, not members. They're not actually part of a gang. They have associated in some way, which means they could have spoken to a gang member. They could, you know, evidence that's used is appearing in the same photograph as a gang, another gang associate. It could be even that a gang associate who's validated has their name written in their cell. So, you know, it could be things that the inmate actually has no control over.
Or reading material. You talk about the books that one keeps.
Right. A lot of the evidence that I found in my investigation that is considered evidence for gang affiliation include books like Machiavelli's The Prince, anything written by George Jackson, who was a former Black Panther. Writings by Mumia Abu-Jamal have been considered evidence of gang affiliation, and drawings, you know, Aztec drawings. I obtained from a source the confidential gang validation manual, and in that it instructs gang investigators that the use of Spanish words like tío or hermano,
which are your uncle and brother,
could be evidence of gang affiliation.
And you spoke with Daniel Vasquez, who was a former warden of San Quentin, and he said that it's very common for African-American prisoners who display leadership qualities or radical political views to end up in the SHU.
Yeah. Yeah, so, you know, it's something that came up a lot when I was looking into inmates' cases of gang validation was people who were in, the evidence that was used included, you know, Black Panther literature, and a lot of people who are jailhouse lawyers, which means, you know, they're usually people that kind of taught themselves law in prison and will help other prisoners in filing grievances and even help them on their legal cases. And, you know, a lot of these people are put in, you know, because they associate with somebody else who is a gang member. They're helping them on their case. But, you know, one person I deal with a lot in my article is Vincent Bruce, and he kind of went through many years of you know, getting put in the shoe, getting out. And when he first got put in the shoe and validated as a gang associate, he sued the Department of Corrections and said that they were retaliating against him for his jailhouse lawyering. You know, he had been participated in hunger strikes and things like that in the past. And after many years, he actually settled, the CDCR settled his case. And he was out of the shoe actually before he settled, but after he settled, days after he settled, they put him back in, and they claimed, and this is all documented, that his litigation against CDCR was itself gang activity.
And that's Shane Bauer. He is the author of the new Mother Jones cover article, "Solitary in Iran Nearly Broke Me. I Never Thought I'd See Worse in American Prisons." It's titled "No Way Out." And I'd like to invite our listeners to join our conversation. You can call us at 866-798-8255. It's a toll-free number. If you've ever been an inmate, we'd like to hear from you and hear what it was like for you, especially if you're somebody who's spent time in solitary confinement or has a loved one in solitary confinement. Our number, again, is toll-free, 866-798-8255. Again, that's 866-798-8255. You can also send an email to feedback@yourcallradio.org. And the fundamental question of what constitutes cruel and unusual punishment. It's forbidden in the Bill of Rights, but does Pelican Bay and other shoes go over the line? What's justified in punishing criminals and what goes too far? 866-798-8255 is our toll-free number. And if you've been a guard or other prison staff, what do you think about solitary? 866-798-8255, or you can send us an email to feedback@yourcallradio.org. So we've been talking about how inmates end up in solitary confinement and this thing called gang validation, which dates back to what, 2006? Is that when they started this policy?
No, it's older than that. I don't know exactly when it started, but it's at least since the 90s.
Okay, so and then what somebody can do to get out of what's called a validation is do something called debriefing in the shoe.
Right.
Can you explain what that
is? Yeah, that's one of the two ways to get out. This is the way that, you know, an inmate can get out really at any time. They basically, you know, approach prison staff and say they would like to debrief, which means that they sit down with a gang investigator and give up everything they know about the gang that they're accused of being associates of. This is a very dangerous step, and actually very few, just a few dozen every year debrief, because, you know, if you do this, you know, it's, prisoners call it snitching. It you know, basically kind of puts the death penalty on you from other inmates. So once, if a prisoner does this, once they get out, they never go back to general population. They have to be protected. But, you know, what's complicated about this is for inmates who are put in on, you know, kind of evidence that doesn't actually show clear gang validation, like Diedrich Pennington, who I write about, who's in for the possession of a newspaper article in his journal in which he writes about African-American history and a cup with a dragon. This is evidence he's in for. So it's a person like that who may not even actually be affiliated with the gang. If he wants to debrief, he needs to give up information. So it kind of creates this situation of pressure for people to give up information. Whenever an inmate lists names of other people, then that is considered evidence to bring other people into the shoe.
So to get out, essentially, you've got to name somebody
right.
else. So here is an inmate that reporter Nancy Mullane spoke with. His last name is Luca, and he joined a gang when he was 13. He was convicted of murder when he was 16. That was 1990. And he was sentenced to life without a parole. In 2011, Luca decided to debrief, and here's him talking about life in the shoe.
You wake up early. You discipline yourself. You study. You read, you draw, you write, you do everything possible that you have access to. And you take day by day. You can't really, it's like kind of, you got to kind of have like tunnel vision. You can't think about the future too far ahead. You can't think about your past. That might drive you nuts.
And that was an inmate, Mr. Luca, who is serving time on a life sentence in the SHU. That's the secure housing unit at Pelican Bay Prison in California. Luca's been there 7 years, and you talked with him, Shane.
Yeah, so this Robert Luca is actually the only person I was allowed to speak to. He has kind of, I think he's actually out of the SHU now, but he has kind of been the go-to person because there's a law in California that there's been a law since 2006 that says that journalists cannot request specific inmates to interview. So when somebody goes to Pelican Bay, they are provided with an inmate to interview. And Robert Luca, for at least this past year, has been kind of the one person that, that reporters have been allowed to talk to.
And so Luca finally was able to get back down to Southern California, I believe, so that he would have visits with his family, et cetera. You say it's really rare for somebody to debrief because it's so dangerous.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, he, you know, I don't know his situation now, but other inmates I know that have debriefed get put into kind of a transitional housing unit where they're housed with other prisoners who, you know, have some reason they need to be protected. And, you know, it's a situation that's much better than the SHU. They can actually interact with other people, but they're not back in general population.
And let's go to a caller. KDF in Oakland is on the line. Hi, KDF.
Hi. I just wanted to point out that it is, to me, cruel and unusual punishment to call these men criminals. When we don't, when we're regularly talking about Rumsfeld, call him a criminal. Kissinger, call him a criminal. Cheney, Jack Abramoff, Michael Milken, Jamie Dimon. I mean, there's an entire list of men that we don't even get to know their names, who acted in a criminal manner and brought down the economy and cost people their livelihoods, their homes, and so on and so forth. And it really is upsetting to hear people who, because of their class, are incarcerated being called criminals.
Well, thank you for the call, KDF. We're about to go to a break, but just a quick comment from you. She mentioned that this is cruel and unusual. What do you think about the nomenclature of how we describe inmates? Does that otherize them as non-people somehow?
I mean, yeah, it can have that effect. And I think, you know, what we forget is that people, a lot of these people have been in for 20, 30 years. They've committed very serious crimes, which is why they're, a lot of them, not all of them, but so, you know, kind of why they are called criminals. But, you know, in many of these cases, it's 20, 30 years ago. A lot of these people, you know, have been in prison longer than they were alive by the time they got in. So it's, you know, freezing them at this point that they got put in, I think, is, you know, is a misunderstanding.
And yet, I mean, we are talking about many people who have committed terrible crimes, so
definitely,
calling them criminals is also a rational thing. We're joined by Shane Bauer. He was one of three Americans who was hiking in Iraq along the border with Iran when he was arrested by Iranian authorities and jailed for 26 months. Now he's written the cover article for Mother Jones magazine, No Way Out. Locked up in Iran, I saw men put in the hole for the company they kept, the books they read, the beliefs they held. I did not expect to find the same back home in California. So he's here to talk about the conditions in California's prisons, and he's focused on the nearly 12,000 inmates who are currently held in solitary confinement in California. And if you've been an inmate in California's prisons, what was your experience? We'd love to hear from you. I'm Holly Kernan, and you're listening to Your Call. We'll be right back after this short break.
You're listening to Your Call here on Local Public Radio. If you want to join in today's conversation, you can call 866-798-TALK, 866-798-8255. And please let us know if you're a first-time caller. We always like to hear from new voices. If you prefer to write rather than call, you can email feedback@yourcallradio.org or post a message at yourcallradio.org.
For those of you joining us now, I'm Holly Kernan, sitting in for Rose Aguilar, and this is Your Call. We're podcasting our show. You can find more information at yourcallradio.org, and that's also where you can listen to past shows and sign up for our newsletter to find out what's coming up next. Tomorrow, we'll have a conversation about voter suppression, which focuses on what's happening in swing states. And on Wednesday, we'll talk with the executive director of Doctors Without Borders about the difficult decisions the organization makes to gain access to people in need during humanitarian emergencies. If you have a show idea for us, you can drop us a line at feedback@yourcallradio.org. You can also join our conversation at 866-798-8255 or leave a comment at our website, which is yourcallradio.org. And today our guest is Shane Bauer. He was one of the three American hikers who was imprisoned in Iran after being arrested in 2009. He spent 26 months in Tehran's Evin prison, four of them in solitary confinement, and that led him to write the investigative piece about the California Pelican Bay State Special Housing Unit, or the SHU, and it's published in the November-December issue of Mother Jones Magazine. There's a link at yourcallradio.org. One of the things that your article brings up, Shane, is the constitutionality, the question of due process, the question of whether this constitutes cruel and unusual punishment, which we were talking a little bit about before the break. What are some of the constitutional issues, and are they being challenged in court?
The issue of cruel and unusual punishment is there's a class action lawsuit underway now involving Pelican Bay inmates claiming that these are all people who have been in solitary for at least 10 years, and they're claiming that the SHU constitutes cruel and unusual punishment. But on the issue of due process, I think it's important to know that, you know, when somebody gets put in the SHU, they go through they have a hearing, essentially. This whole process is internal. There's no judge that's involved in any of this. And, you know, this is the worst punishment that our penal system has to offer, aside from death. This hearing happens, you know, very much behind closed doors. CDCR would not allow me to witness one. It involves the inmate and the gang investigator. There's only two people there. The inmate is not allowed to have a lawyer. He's not allowed to gather evidence. He can verbally contest the claims against him, but much of the evidence, if it was evidence provided by informants, is confidential. So, you know, in many cases, the inmates don't even know what the evidence is against them, and you know, have very little chance of refuting this. And then once they're in, they can appeal it internally. But the Department of Corrections couldn't give me a single example of an appeal that succeeded. So, you know, this, yeah, I think
an appeal that succeeded,
right.
And you write in your article, when Josh and I finally came before the Revolutionary Court in Iran, we had a lawyer present. We weren't allowed to speak with him. In California, an inmate facing the worst punishment our penal system has to offer, short of death, can't even have a lawyer in the room.
Right.
I think that would surprise a lot of people.
Yeah.
Let's hear, here, I have another inmate that I'd like to have on. His name is Carmen Ward. He was sentenced to death row in 1991 for a gang-related murder of a 15-year-old. And in 2005, just before the execution of Stanley Tookie Williams at San Quentin, Ward was accused, along with other death row inmates, of threatening guards. So he's been in the Adjustment Center ever since. The Adjustment Center is solitary confinement at San Quentin's death row. And let's hear from inmate Carmen Ward.
East Block, you have access at education programs.
You don't have access to education programs?
I have nothing here. Zip. You don't even have a library program here. There's a brand new library built in the San Quentin. We're not even allowed access to it. Bring some fairness in here. Bring some fairness. There is a process and a system called a 608. It doesn't even apply to us.
What's a 608?
What's 608, Robinson?
Working them have access to their movement throughout the facility.
And it also has an assessment chart for how long you have to stay here.
And you've been here for...
7 years, and I don't even know when I'm going to leave. And I'm not the only one. No one knows when we're going to leave.
You don't know what the process is to get out?
No, there are rules, but the rules don't apply to us.
And that is an inmate at San Quentin Prison, Carmen Ward, who's been in the SHU, the Adjustment Center at San Quentin, for 7 years. And what he's saying is he doesn't know what the process is to get out.
Right. And I know I'd like to add that in the SHU, there are people have no programs. They have no educational programs. They aren't even allowed religious services. So, you know, people can't see a priest or an imam. They're totally alone. And people that have mental conditions, unless they're considered serious by CDCR, which the psychiatrist Pelican Bay told me means full breaks with reality, unless they have a condition like that, if they are suffering from depression, they are only allowed to see a therapist once a month. And inmates that do leave the SHU because they have serious mental illnesses go to another psychiatric unit where they're still in solitary confinement.
And that's Shane Bauer. He's the author of the cover article, No Way Out, in this month's Mother Jones magazine. And it's all about the nearly 12,000 California inmates who are in solitary confinement. And let's go back to callers. Let me give out the number in case you want to join us. It's 866-798-8255. Why do you think so many prisoners are spending years in solitary confinement? Does it constitute cruel and unusual punishment, or is it the right sentence? 866-798-8255. You can also send an email to feedback@yourcallradio.org. And Anna writes that I wanted to let Shane know that he was allowed to interview Paul Bocanegra during his visit to Pelican Bay. Thank you for that, Anna. And let's go to Sunny in Corte Madera. Hi, Sunny.
Hi, can you hear me?
Yes.
Okay, yeah, I'm a volunteer at San Quentin Prison and have been for 6 years. And the very existence, in my opinion, of San Quentin Prison is cruel and unusual punishment. The cells have to be locked and unlocked with keys. That's how outdated that place is. It was constructed in 1852. excuse me for 1 minute. I'm sorry. All human beings are human beings, no matter how serious a crime the men at San Quentin or any other prison committed, they are still human beings. But you know, if you can convince people that they're not human beings, that they're animals or they're pigs or whatever you want to use, it's much easier to treat them as less than a human being. And I think that SHU is absolutely cruel and unusual punishment. There was a program on television not too long ago. I think it was Channel 7. I'm not sure. But anyway, one of the reporters spent 4 days in the SHU, and you could see how it affected him in 4 days. Can you imagine 7 years? You go in sane, and you are driven insane while you're in there, and you come out maybe a gibbering idiot. I don't know. But we have to stop this in this country. This is just... I've heard that interview before that you just played, and I cried the first time I heard it, and I'm crying now because it's true. You cannot put a human being away alone without any mental stimulation. Human beings are social animals, and they need human contact.
Well, thank you so much for your call, Sunny. I really appreciate that. Shane, one of the things that you write about with your own experience and then looking at studies, medical studies that have really looked at the long-term consequences and effects of solitary confinement.
Yeah. One psychologist that I cite in my article says that anything over 10 days in solitary confinement has psychological impacts. And this last month, there have been reports by Human Rights Watch, Amnesty International, and the ACLU all talking about the debilitating psychological effects of solitary. You know, I've experienced it myself, and people that I correspond with, they're people that have, especially people who have been in for many years, have a hard time even communicating themselves on paper. I mean, you know... People lose something essential when they're cut off from society for so long.
And that's Shane Bauer. And you can join our conversation on Your Call by calling 866-798-8255. We're talking about solitary confinement in California's prisons. And there are nearly 12,000 inmates who are held in some form of solitary confinement. Do you consider that cruel and unusual punishment? Is that just? Is that justice? 866-798-8255. If you've ever been an inmate, we'd love to hear your perspective. If you've ever been a guard, a volunteer, or staff at one of California's prisons, we'd also like to hear from you. 866-798-8255. And you can also email us at feedback@yourcallradio.org. And we got an email asking, what is Shane's opinion about Prop 34, which is the death penalty initiative? That is an initiative to repeal the death penalty and replace it with life in prison without the possibility of parole.
We're being presented with two alternatives that are both very serious. But myself personally, I think a country like the United States is, democratic country shouldn't have the death penalty.
And let's go to George in San Francisco. Hi, George. Welcome to your call.
Hi, good morning.
Hi, Shane, thanks. Yeah.
I think I would ask you about this to see if we understand correctly. What people are not being told, they have to go to the SHU. They're being told you can go to the SHU or you can cooperate with us, which means that according to some hearsay, we can suspect you. You can become a person of interest in this system, and we can set you aside and tell you that you have a chance to go to the SHU, which is a great place to go if you like to be by yourself for an indefinite period of time, arbitrarily locked down. Or you can cooperate with us, and then we can let people know that you are some kind of an informant or you're a fink of some sort in the system. So it's a bargain, right? And I'm sure that psychologists who are qualified to describe this kind of situation would call it, have a name for it. You're put in a terrible bind where you're told you can be alone for an indefinite amount of time, or you can cooperate with us, and we'll let everybody know that you're some sort of a rat. Isn't that what you're talking about?
Yeah. So stay on the line for a sec, George. Go ahead. Can you respond, Shane?
That's the most likely way of getting out is essentially, as you're saying, kind of informing on other prisoners. And, you know, the other way is to be kind of deemed inactive, which is not very common. And the soonest that can happen is 6 years. So, if somebody is put in the SHU the next day, you know, they're sitting there alone, the chance they have of getting out anytime in the next 6 years is informing on other prisoners and essentially getting other prisoners put in the SHU.
George, does that answer your question? George, are you still there?
Yeah, hello.
Yeah, did that answer your question?
I think it doesn't really answer the question. Actually, it sort of sets us up for another question.
Go ahead and ask it.
Isn't this an arbitrary system? In its very essence, it's not due process.
I think that's the issue now that, you know, needs discussion. I mean,
how can you put this kind of a separate regime? I mean, it's like as if another state exists.
Yeah.
You can say to yourself, within this democratic or whatever you call it system, mm-hmm. there is another system which presupposes individuals can be smeared. Any amount of hearsay can be loaded on to their record, and we can do this arbitrarily, and nobody can check it.
Right, and as I found in my investigation with one case, a case of a man named Ricky Gray. He was in the SHU and had some 14 pieces of evidence used for him, all of which were from informants, and I got a report, a confidential report that was written by prison staff, because the warden actually took this unusual step to tell somebody to go back and re-interview all of these informants. And the report that this staff system wrote said that many of these informants actually had never heard of this inmate and were never interviewed about him. They found that the evidence against him was essentially false, but he's still there. He's still in the SHU. It's very difficult. There's no eyes, you know, no judicial, no judge kind of looking in on this and making sure that things are going as they should. And, you know, the, I guess when we talk about arbitrariness, I think the biggest issue is this, you know, what evidence is being used to put people in and say, you know, to accuse somebody of gang membership is, you know, can a newspaper, the possession of a newspaper article be considered a link to a gang member, as it was in one of the cases I dealt with.
And you also note in your article that there are inmates who have spent 20 years in solitary confinement. There's somebody who's spent 40 years mm-hmm. in solitary confinement. Let's go to another caller. Let's go to Polo in El Cerrito. Welcome to your call. Hi, Polo.
Hi. Thank you for taking my call. I guess the first point I'd like to make is that... the subway's going by.
Yes, I can hear Bart. Go
okay.
on.
That the gentleman that's, I guess, that did the writing.
Shane Bauer, yes.
Yes, the reason he got, I guess he's comparing his incarceration or, you know, when he got put into the current system that's in place at, you know, the prison that he visited. But in reality, there's no comparison. The guys that are in the SHU right now deserve to be there. They're there because they committed very serious crimes, not only by getting into prison, but while in prison. And now we're looking at, you know, I'm not sure what his ultimate goal is, but we're looking at letting these, and they literally are, they're animals, letting them back into general population to once again basically become terrorists and terrorize the entire prison population, kill people, you know, send people to kill people. I mean, it's...
So stay on the line, Polo. What you're saying, as I understand it, is that essentially these are folks in the SHU that were accused of gang activity, and
exactly.
they were supposed to be isolated.
They're not accused. They're known gang members. They're known not just of, you know, Mexican gangs, but you've got Aryan gangs. You've got all kinds of, you know, gangs in prison. And these guys are known gang members that deserve to be kept away from the general population because they're dangerous.
So hold on one second, Polo. So that's the argument that's being made. Your article shows that the violence has actually gone up since this isolation policy. Go ahead and stay on the line, Polo, but let's hear from Shane.
Yeah, I'm glad you raised this point. You know, before I started investigating this, if you would have asked me, you know, why people get put in, you know, solitary confinement in the U.S. in California, I would have assumed that they, you know, committed some kind of violent act in prison, hurt somebody, killed somebody.
And for some of these people, that is true.
Actually,
I mean, the majority of the people.
Actually, the situation now is people can get put in the SHU for actually, you know, committing a serious rules violation. You know, if you beat somebody up, you get a sentence, a finite sentence in the SHU. The longest of those is 5 years. That's the maximum. That's if you kill a guard. But association is, you know, minimum of 6 years, essentially. And, you know, when people get put to the SHU, it actually has nothing to do with their original crime. It doesn't matter if they killed somebody or didn't kill somebody. You know, nobody gets put in prison and sent right to the SHU. It's based on, you know, gang affiliation, and you know, a little over 20% of people in the SHU are actually gang members. The rest are not. They're gang associates, and many of them haven't even actually committed rules violations. So somebody that I deal with that I mentioned a little bit ago, Dietrich Pennington, has been in for 4 years. The only rules violations he's ever committed in his time in prison has been for refusing or coming late to roll call and refusing to be housed in a kind of dorm style cell. You know, none of this could actually be considered dangerous. That's not to say that there aren't, in fact, dangerous people in the SHU. Of course there are. But it's important to know that the vast majority of people that are there are not actually gang members. They're not even accused of being gang members. They're just accused of associating in some way.
And that's Shane Bauer. He wrote the cover article in Mother Jones magazine called No Way Out, about solitary confinement in California. And in that article, he writes, the rate of violent incidents in California prisons is nearly 20% higher than when Pelican Bay opened in 1989. Let me, did you want to, go ahead.
Yeah.
I want to get some more callers because we've got a lot of.
And just on that point, you know, there have been, in recent years, a number of solitary facilities closed down across the United States. Mississippi has been the one that's kind of most known, and they closed, one of their prisons closed down there, or they reduced their solitary population by 75% in the mid-2000s, and since then, violence in the prison has actually decreased by 50%.
And that's Shane Bauer. We may have time to get, we're going to try and get as many calls as we can in. The number is 866-798-8255. Again, that's 866-798-8255. Or you can email us at feedback@yourcallradio.org. Jackie emails and says, putting inmates on the radio is objectionable, period. People can speak for them, but not the prisoners. They can say anything and you don't know what's true. You'd have to look at the structure of privileges and punishments in the prison system to make it work. And you're granting special privileges to criminals. And then we've got another email that says, whether it was Abu Ghraib or Guantanamo or Bagram, the new Guantanamo, we always hear that these inmates are the worst of the worst. What does Shane think about this sweeping propaganda label?
I can't really speak to the other situations, but, I think when we think of the worst of the worst, you know, we think of people that have kind of committed the worst possible crimes that we can think of. And I think that in the case of the California prison system, this is misleading because this, you know, this isn't the criteria by which people get put in.
Well, one email asks, what do you think is the right way to deal with the most dangerous inmates?
I don't know if I'm really the person to answer that question, honestly. People, you know, various prisoners groups have suggested, you know, other situations where the people who are very dangerous in prison are put in, you know, kind of a, you know, a type of isolation, but it doesn't need to be solitary confinement, where they're, you know, with maybe other members of a gang that they're involved in, or, you know, some kind of situation that's not so extremely isolated.
And let's go to more callers. Eric and Salinas, welcome to your call.
Good morning. I'm interested in your response. I've heard the other side, and what I've been told by gang police officers that the gang leaders are isolated simply because it impairs their ability to call the shots in gangs, and it's they say there's a major problem with getting the leaders to not still be the leaders while in prison, and that's why. And they still have trouble with them in solitary, apparently. And I'm just interested in your response to that part of the problem.
Thank you, Eric. Yeah, and we've heard that from the CDCR as well.
Yeah, and I have as well. That was actually, when I was at Pelican Bay, that was the explanation that was given to me by the gang investigator about why the SHU essentially exists, because they need to remove the gang leadership from the larger population. The reality is that a very small percentage of the SHU population are actually gang leaders. An example that I can give is the Mexican Mafia. That's, you know, the largest prison gang that really exists in California, has the most power. They have well over 2,000 associates and members in the SHU. Only 98 of those are actually validated as members. And that's not, you know, I don't know how many of those 98 are actually leaders, but that's a tiny fraction of the people that are in, under their umbrella that are put in the SHU.
And let's try and squeeze in one final caller. Lance in Santa Cruz, welcome to your call.
Hey, thanks for taking my call. I know you're just about out of time, so I'll try to be as brief as I can. I was just typing an email in case I didn't get on. I just want to bring up the issue of punishment in general and say, I think we're really asking the wrong question. The question should be, is why are we so focused on punishment? In my view, punishment based on science doesn't work. I'm not saying that there aren't times when we shouldn't restrain people. I think we need to do that. But the focus on punishment is basically a religious teaching. It's not a science-based teaching. So I also just want to thank you for the work you're doing.
Shane Bauer.
Shane, thank you, Shane.
Thanks.
So any thoughts on that? I would love to hear. Thanks.
Thank you. So the nature of our system, and in terms of the CDCR, they did put rehabilitation back in their name and are working at some reforms.
Yeah, I think this is, this goes back to the point that was made earlier about the impact of the shoe on prison violence, you know, in California, it's actually increased 20% since the shoe was started. So it's, you know, the goal isn't actually being met. And, you know, in the shoe, there are no rehabilitative services whatsoever. I mean, there's no education, there's no religious services. People that were involved in Alcoholics Anonymous and Narcotics Anonymous aren't, they can't be anymore. And, you know, most of these people parole eventually. They go straight out from the shoe onto the streets. And, you know, a lot of them wind up back in prison. They're not going through a rehabilitative process.
And just we're just about out of time, but any final thoughts on, you know, having gotten out of prison, having had that experience yourself, and, you know, people thought that you were guilty of espionage, mm-hmm. one of the worst crimes that there is. Having written this article and really delved into California's prison systems, any sort of final thoughts for us on what all of this has meant for you?
You know, I was in a situation where I was held, I was in prison and in a very isolated situation within prison because I was accused of something that I didn't do. You know, I was accused of being a spy. I was not a spy. Everyone knew I was a spy, including the Iranian authorities. And, you know, so that was definitely something that I related to. So, you know, I think in the situation here in California, in the United States, you know, we need to be making sure that people are actually, you know, who we say they are. We need an actual process, some kind of judicial oversight.
Just more sunlight is really what you're advocating here. And I'm sorry that we're going to have to leave it there. We've been speaking with Shane Bauer, who's an investigative journalist, and he wrote the cover story for Mother Jones Magazine about solitary confinement. You can find that, a link to that, at our website. It's yourcallradio.org. Thanks for all of your calls and emails. I apologize that I couldn't get to all of them. I'm Holly Kernan, and here's what's coming up tomorrow. Who's voting in 2012? On the Next Your Call, we'll talk about the changes in who is voting and how they're doing it. Which barriers to voting could affect elections in states across the country? What's the status of electronic voting and registration? Who are the new voters in 2012? And are you one of them? It's Your Call with Rose Aguilar and you. Support for Your Call comes from the listeners of KALW. To sign up for our podcast or newsletter or to share the show on Facebook or Twitter, visit yourcallradio.org. Malihe Raz is on and Ali Budner produce the show. Matt Martin is our executive producer. Phil Hartman is our chief engineer. Joe Burke is our studio engineer. Our theme music was composed and performed by Live Human. Your Call is produced by KALW in San Francisco with special thanks to our partners at KUSP in Santa Cruz.
Cross Currents Monday at 5. We continue our series from inside California's most secure prison blocks.
Hey, you know, you gotta have contact with your family, or you don't have contact with your family, you don't have nothing. You know, that's something to keep your sanity.
The East Block of San Quentin. That's Monday at 5 on Cross Currents.
This is Joseph Pache of City Visions. Tonight on our program, we'll look at two state propositions on November's ballot that could substantially change California's criminal justice system. Prop 34 aims to repeal the death penalty, while Prop 36 proposes a change in the state's three strikes law. Join me for a discussion about the pros and cons of these ballot measures. That's City Visions, tonight at 7, here on Local Public Radio, KALW, San Francisco.
Public Radio, KALW San Francisco. We're online at KALW.org. Coming up in just a moment, World Have Your Say from the BBC. We will begin with the newscast. That should start momentarily. Following World Have Your Say at noon, it's Radio Netherlands, the state we're in. And then at 1 o'clock this afternoon, alternative radio here on KALW San Francisco, a listener-supported community broadcast service.